Good morning. Just after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. We includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game, and he is the radio color voice for Rebels football and the co-host of the Tony Sanchez Show Wednesday nights throughout the season on our sister station, ESPN, The Leader. Also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who among several other responsibilities...
HOFer,
right?
Yeah.
He's getting close. He's 20 years.
He's getting close.
20 years, man. Do they count when you were here before, when you come back? Do they count that as 20 years?
I don't know. I'm sure they do. I mean, I think when people move here from other markets, I think they count that. So, because I know there's people who are in the building that are in the HOF who came from...
Now, what
markets.
About like Caleb Herring, who was interviewed like back in his sophomore year of UNLV? Would that count? The interviews count as being on the radio and give him 10 years?
See, you know, rollover minutes.
He's close with Russ Langer, so I think Russ has some pull.
Russ definitely has some pull.
What is he like? 10-time Nevada Broadcaster of the Year?
16, oh God,
16.
I
want to
say 16. Yeah. I think
when is he going to share some love with you, man?
I don't know. He's
got to share it with Cofield. Share it with you.
We do a great job on the show, I think.
You carry him.
No.
It's a good thing to say. It was cool. But, you know, Mags, yes, a soon-to-be HOFer, and he is the locker room reporter for Golden Knights Radio here on Fox Sports Radio, and you can hear him during all the Golden Knights games, get some great interviews. Really enjoyed the one you got with, I think it was Riley Smith last game. I was standing there listening to the interview. The only thing I think you didn't ask him is, why did he have the most horrific penalty shot maybe in the history of Golden Knights? It's only a three-year history, but Mags,
James Neal had a really bad one season one.
I remember that, but I still think this one was worse. I mean, this one wasn't even a shot. He got caught up somewhere.
Yeah, he lost the puck.
Completely, yeah, it was.
You know what's funny about Riley Smith, too? I don't know if a lot of people pick it up, but he's very funny. But it's a very dry
sense of humor.
Like what I asked him about playing with, I think I said to him, how, you know, we always hear about you guys.
You know what sense
coaches,
of humor reminds me
say,
of?
Keep it simple. I said, so you play with Marchessault and Carlson, so how easy do they make the game to play? He goes, well, it'd be really hard to play without the two of them. I know that.
Yeah, I was right there. It was pretty classic.
It's almost like asking a quarterback what it's like without your offensive line.
Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say,
that'd
somebody
be a lot more difficult without those guys blocking for me.
Just a little bit, right? A tad.
Unless they don't like the quarterback.
But
right?
Riley Smith, it's a good assessment. It is a dry. He is a funny guy. When you listen to him, he's kind of laid back and quiet, but he's got a dry sense of humor.
He's very, very thoughtful, I think. And he's very, you know, there's a lot of hockey speak, like cliches, but I think his delivery is very sarcastic, and I really like that. Like Eric Holla to me was like that, too, where.
He could be an ass, though.
But he was, yeah, but you know what? I think once you got past the, like, he. It was almost like initiation with him.
Yeah, maybe once you've talked to him a few times and he got comfortable with you, I can see that happening. But
whereas James Neal was not that guy.
James Neal was never fun to talk to. Even when they won, he wasn't fun to talk to.
Yeah.
I mean, he just... James Neal's one of those guys that at times, you know, I use that cliche occasionally, but he was a guy that it seemed like, especially when they lost, like he didn't even like himself. You know, so it's like he's not going to like you if he doesn't like himself.
Yeah, but I think that's the kind of guy you want on your team because he was intense all the time.
He was a good teammate. I mean, the guys liked him. Yeah, very popular amongst the teams. Let me get through this. Also here, of course, starting a couple weeks ago now, we have our newest member of the team, Spencer Ostrowski. We are going to call him the Wiz. It makes it a lot easier on all of us. Right, there we go. And we'll get some kind of an opening for that. Right. Listen, the show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network. And you can watch the show on Facebook Live. And again, the LV Sports Network, that's www.lvsportsnetwork. It's real simple. Check it out. The page, again, is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. You can find Facebook Live there, also on my personal page, and we'll put it up on a few other pages after the show. And the phone lines are always open. It is a live show, so give us a call. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
We knew they had a great team. Like they call themselves, they're savages, but in this jungle called the American League, we're the apex predator.
It's a failure. You know, in spring training, we talked about winning the division and, you know, putting ourselves in a good spot in the postseason, you know, to win a World Series. And we came up short, you know, and so it's, you know, no matter how many games we won the regular season or, you know, what else we did, you know, it's season's a failure.
With two sides of the emotions, Carlos Correa of the Houston Astros sounding pretty damn happy, the apex predator.
How many times do you think that has been said?
Oh, my God.
Like, the Bombers of the Jungle, and then, oh, we're the Apex Predators.
Predators.
That sounds so rehearsed.
They were against the Yankees in this series, that's for sure. They were definitely the Apex Predators, and of course, you heard Aaron Judge and a failure. And really, when you put up the numbers the Yankees did this year, you know, anything short of a World Series would be a failure, but Houston could say the same thing. You know, I mean, both those teams had the personnel to get to the World Series and to win it.
And I just disagree a little bit, because I think Houston did what you're supposed to do to get to the World Series, and that's solidify pitching. Like, they had the opportunity to go get the two best available pitchers, and they did it, and they got them, and that's what wins you the series in October and late in the season.
Yeah,
you have to have a good pitching staff.
No, without question.
Well, and you look at National Washington too.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
the Dodgers did nothing at the trade deadline.
Exactly.
You know, Atlanta did nothing at the trade deadline. The Cardinals somehow never do anything at the trade deadline. And are always in the mix, and I hate them.
Boy, if you hate them, you love this postseason because they couldn't put runs on the board. It was amazing.
That's the story with everybody when it comes to the postseason. If you can't put runs on the board, you have to be able to pitch to win games.
And the Washington Nationals, I mean, four deep in starting pitching. That staff is wicked.
I'm trying to come up with a World Series off the top of my mind where we've had six starters where you can make the case that they're the top 10 pitchers in baseball.
Well, I'll tell you this much right now, I want to get through what's on tap, but let me tell you this, which is sickening to be a Detroit Tigers fan. If you take the starting pitchers, two on one side and one on the other, and I'm talking about Anibal Sanchez, Max Scherzer, and, of course, Justin Verlander, put those three back on the Detroit Tigers where they were at one time, and how different of a season do the Detroit Tigers
have? Do you like punishing yourself?
Yeah, I know.
Pittsburgh was in the same situation because, I mean, the starters in the Tampa Bay.
Pittsburgh's always in that situation because they have fire sales every year.
To have two guys going in a serious clinching game that used to play for you, that's pretty bad.
How do you think it feels right now watching this?
Scherzer and Sanchez was screwed out of the perfect game. Remember that?
100%.
Yeah. I thought he was out of the league.
No, he's and how has he revamped his career in Washington? It's been incredible. He is definitely, you can't say the big two anymore with just Strasburg and Scherzer, you have to include Sanchez in there now as a big three. I mean, these guys are really good. But, hey, What's on Tap is brought to you and does come your way thanks to the title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. And the other thing that we are going to be talking about on tap today is we'll talk a little bit about the UNLV game. Again, in the first half, they came out. They were resilient. They played well and they played tough. But something I have said and we'll talk about shortly is – I always say that what defines a coach and a football team is how they perform coming out of the locker room in the second half, because the best coaches watch and analyze the first half while it is taking place and quickly assess it in halftime, and they make adjustments. And you see those adjustments come out in the second half. You definitely saw the adjustments Fresno State made in the second half. And those are the kind of things that frustrate fans of teams that constantly come out strong and lose in the second half. You'd much rather play better in the second half than the first half. As a Lions fan, I see that with Matthew Stafford all the time. He has good first half, but it's either the third or fourth quarter he has a tremendous letdown and teams get back in the game. That is a problem, and it is a problem with UNLV, and it has been for some time now. Halftime adjustments, and Caleb will talk about that in a little bit. Also, we're definitely going to talk today about the Golden Knights. People that were worried about this team, please put the worry caps away, as now they've won the last two games. They've won 4 of 5, and this is a really good team, and you're really going to get to see what this team is made of this week, as they've got a lot of games, 4 games in a week, including Friday night at home at T-Mobile Arena against the Colorado Avalanche right now. I can't say the only undefeated team. They've got an overtime loss, but other than that, they're 7-0-1 right now and a force to be reckoned with, and this team has only gotten themselves better after putting together a nice run out of the 8 hole in the Western Conference last year. This team's gotten better. We'll talk a little bit about that. And coming up on the show a little later on, believe it or not, basketball season's here. We know it. We've been seeing the preseason NBA with the NBA about to tip off this week. And, of course, it's college basketball time. And we got a new coach in town that is going to try to reinvent UNLV, somehow rebrand them, get this team back in the, you know, get people back in the MAC. And his name's TJ Otzelberger. He will be here, former coach at South Dakota State, did a pretty good job up there with the Jackrabbits. Got five scholarship players to stay, brought in six more, including six man of the year in the Pac-12, is going to be in the Mountain West and playing for UNLV this year, played at Utah last year. We'll talk to TJ about that. And of course, our picks of the week, man. I mean, we couldn't be any more putrid. If you are somebody out there and you want to bet, you should definitely stick around to the end of this show, because if you bet against all four of us, chances are you're going to make money. And if you do it, I mean, especially Caleb Harris, this guy needs to go in reverse. I mean, it's incredible.
I'm tanking. Hey, listen, purpose.
Don't forget, if you're looking to buy or refinance, the Cardinal Financial Company should be your first choice. Check out cardinalfinancial.com today, and that is what's on tap.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
I'm happy, like I said before, and I thank God and I thank everybody in the ballpark, because what happened today. We are a team that is working together, but I'm really happy, and like I said, I thank God for, because we're going to the World Series.
This is why I'm hot.
Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango. We'll call it a long home run from Centennial Hills Hospital. They have two happy hours every day, and they are America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And, of course, every Monday night, I'm up there at the 215 in North Durango, hosting the best Monday night football party in Las Vegas. Come on up, man. We're giving away wing parties. We give away all kinds of stuff, wings, some unbelievable the last couple games. We have given away some incredible beer steins, including a really cool tequila shakers. It's pretty cool. Come on down. We'll be down there tomorrow night. And, of course, tomorrow night, the New England Patriots are playing Chris Chapman. Jets.
America's and, team for the second week in a row.
Yeah, right. The two back-to-back America's team games.
Well, goodness.
Sam Darnold.
They're
Sam
America's Darnold, team because, you know, they're playing the teams that I think America hates the most.
Well, yeah, but the Cowboys deem themselves America's team.
Collectively, and we all hate the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And I think without question.
Yeah. With Jose, yeah, 100%. Jose Vellante, the biggest Cowboy hater I know, probably loves it out there, especially last week, his Jets beating those Cowboys. And
the Jets played the Patriots before they play the Cowboys. And they had a bye week in the middle.
The Jets are a team that plays the Patriots tough when they put it together. And I'll tell you right now, there is no question this team is a different team with Sam Darnold at the helm. And you do see what a legit quarterback, how much of a difference it can make to a team.
They're unstoppable because with him.
It took a putrid team.
According to him, they're unstoppable.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think...
Well, there's only way to go but up, right?
But there are a couple of teams in the league, namely the Miami Dolphins being the top runner, that I think the only quarterback that could turn that team around would be God himself. And he'd have to come down and put on a helmet, man, because I don't know what that team is really bad. Although they still got Caleb Herring last week, because he was giving up four with the Dolphins, giving up four taking the Redskins in Miami, and they covered but still found a way to lose.
Stupid.
Just a bad team. But I'll tell you what, I wanted to start off today with a reverse blazing, talking about the Yankees. And you can't really say this is a super reverse blazing, but it's an interesting fact. Do you know that the decade of the 2010 decade is the first time that the New York Yankees have not gone to the World Series since the decade of 1910. So it's been 100 years, 10 decades, that the New York Yankees have always been in a World Series up until this year, since almost the start of Major League Baseball. I mean, they're pretty impressive when you think that's only 10 World Series if you look at it, but they've been in a lot more than that, where they've been in two and three in a decade and won a couple back-to-back. But the fact that they haven't gone, it's kind of reverse blazing for them, because this is a year that I think a lot of people really, as you said, Caleb, the pitching wasn't where it needs to be in the postseason, but I still think a lot of people thought the Yankees, with the power that they had and that lineup, it can be vicious when they're all on.
No, I didn't.
You didn't.
I didn't
you
think
didn't
so.
Believe in
I didn't, because I just, the history of the game has told us that you have to have good pitching, and they just didn't have the pitching staff to do it.
I agree. Well, who's your blazing?
Who's my blazing?
Yeah,
right now?
Who's your blazing?
It's college football collectively. Generally speaking, the underdogs, because the underdogs had a big week for the last couple of weeks.
They really have. It's really,
Vanderbilt beat Missouri.
Illinois?
Huge. Illinois beating Wisconsin.
How does Wisconsin go down to Illinois?
Kansas took Texas
Kansas
to the wire.
Kansas took a field goal. At the end?
Did you hear their coach after the game? It's classic.
No. Which coach? Texas? Yeah. Tom Herman? What did he say?
No, he was just like, well, we've got to be better. Well,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was embarrassing, man. Yeah. That was embarrassing.
that was ridiculous. But no, it's college football. The year of the underdog. Underdog's coming through.
Okay.
And Vanderbilt beating a top 22, a top, what was Missouri, 22 at the time? They won't be 22 anymore. But they're
getting spanked by UNLV.
So, ipso facto, UNLV is a top 25 team.
Yeah. You look at it,
that's how you look at it.
They beat Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt beat the top 25 team.
Transitive property says that UNLV is a top 25 team.
I would definitely say, and I'm not going to disagree with you, I am really enjoying college football this year.
I love college. And yeah. Now there's like the Pac-12 coming back to life with Oregon. I think if they went out, they should have a shot at making it.
Don't you love how I don't know, because they lost a neutral site game to the number two team in the country,
that now they're automatically out.
It's ridiculous.
Yet Georgia loses at home
to South Carolina.
And they're still alive.
They're in the top five. And they're still alive.
That's ridiculous.
SEC.
Ridiculous.
I hate it.
South Carolina is not an SEC school. Like, Missouri should not be in the top 25 after losing to Vanderbilt.
The whole SEC thing drives me nuts. Because I'm a UNLV alum.
Yeah.
If Reno is 11-0 going into that last game of the season and they have a shot at making a New Year's Day bowl or a top six bowl, whatever they call it,
I'm rooting
for whoever they're playing.
Yeah. You got to beat them.
And I'm not going to chant Mountain West. No, Mountain West.
I understand. But, you know,
the Patriots have won six Super Bowls.
It's a money game. And the SEC teams make money off of this.
When you are a collective of loser states.
Yeah, you scream for it because.
Like Arkansas and Louisiana.
Like Vanderbilt gets $42 million a year just for being a part of the SEC.
Yeah.
It's a joke. The bottom rung of the SEC, they get $42 million
a year, just because
they're in this conference.
Let's be fair, though.
Off of the marketing rights and all that.
Vanderbilt is like Northwestern. And Stanford, where they keep the GPA of the conference above.
That's right.
You take them out,
and they're okay with their
colleges. You can't really say that because Stanford competes.
Vanderbilt was good when they had James Franklin. And Vanderbilt's been to bowl games in the past 5 years.
They've been pretty good.
But I understand.
$42 million for the lowest rung team of a conference is a ridiculous amount of money.
They paid for the Frontier Complex in one year.
Give me your blazon.
Ridiculous.
Pony Express is back. How'd you like to throw 23 incomplete passes, yet still have six touchdowns and over 450 yards? That was Shane Bouchel yesterday as SMU.
Yeah.
Number 19 in the country. They improved to 7-0. They blow out Temple. Yeah, they are back. Pony Express. I like the logo.
It is a pretty nice logo.
For pretty good reason.
Yeah.
But wide receiver.
All they need is Eric Dickerson, and they can be number one in the country.
I think his name is Reggie Roberson. Yeah, Reggie Roberson Jr. He had a huge afternoon. Of course, you would expect someone to, with Bouchel throwing for 450 yards. But Roberson, 8 receptions, 250 yards, 3 touchdowns, a long of 75.
Did they run the ball at all?
Yeah, the running back, Xavier Jones, 29 carries.
They were just on offense the whole time.
Well, I mean, you look, 53 pass attempts. They ran the ball 55 times. They had over 100 plays run from scrimmage.
Shame on Temple.
Yeah, seriously.
Was
their defense even
Temple,
out there?
Temple yeah, still scored just 21 points in the game.
Yeah.
Does anybody play defense anymore?
No, not Mac.
I mean, that's a good game to go to and drink a hot chocolate and peppermint schnapps.
Well, that's the one where
take the over.
You feel bad for the cheerleaders because they're doing so many push-ups on the sidelines.
They're like swollen, like cock diesel cheerleaders.
Yeah, seriously,
SMU has Schwarzenegger.
You're not going to make the team this year, honey. Your arms are too thin. There's no way you're going to be able to do no push-ups to be on the squad this year. That's classic. Listen, somebody else talking about, you know, the college game. you got to give it up for Jalen Hurts, man. I mean, this kid, you know, left for dead at Alabama last year, decided not to transfer, waited for this year to transfer, used the one extra year he gets of being a graduate transfer in eligibility, and talking about making the most of it. Right now, there's no doubt the kid's the front runner for the Heisman, right, which would be the third straight Heisman at Oklahoma.
Especially with Tua out now. With Tua out, we'll talk about that
is also.
Is there any quarterback in the country that does not want to go play at Oklahoma right now?
I understand, but you got to perform. And Jalen Hurts yesterday, 16 of 17,
and the one incompletion was a drop pass.
He should have been 100%. Tremendous, no doubt about it. I'm curious
why Jalen Hurts isn't, like, he's Heisman frontrunner and all that, but if every time they show the quarterback, like the top quarterbacks for the draft, he's not even on the list. And it's like, it's a shame to me, because it's like, well, why not? Like,
I'm not disagreeing, Caleb, but I think that has got to be, look at how much it motivated him. I think him losing his starting job at Alabama has turned him into the quarterback that he is right now at Oklahoma. And I think another, and here you are again, basically disrespecting him. And I think this could help him, his career. I think
it could.
A guy like you, man, that's the perfect thing you need. It's motivation, man. 100%, man. And I think, I like Jalen Hurts, and I think he could come out and surprise people in the National Football League, because no one's looking at the guy.
He could do the same thing that Dak Prescott's doing right now.
Something exactly.
He's as good as Dak Prescott, in my opinion.
But he has improved so much.
How much of a passer has he improved over the last few years? I wouldn't even say he's improved. I just don't think the system at Alabama was tailored to him.
I want to give it to the kid. You know, we got to say that he's blazing and just been incredible. And somebody else that's blazing, Mags, and you know, that I think it was blazing all of last year, is going to be blazing this year in the Mountain West. And if you enjoy good college basketball, a guy that unfortunately I think is going to be real tough. It's going to be tough for this guy to make it in the NBA, Mags, because he is kind of a tweener and a guy like Sam Merrill.
Yeah, but his game is built for Europe.
It is. No, tremendously well. And the thing is, what this guy can do, he is a flat-out scorer. And I think European basketball, yeah, he'll be a star over there. And I love his game. And you know what I also love? I love his basketball IQ, and he is great to talk to. I got a chance to talk to Sam at the Mountain West Media Days.
Sam Merrill,
yeah. At the Mountain West Media Days at Green Valley Ranch. It was actually a really cool venue to host this, and this was this past Tuesday. Sam, new year. You're coming off a year where you guys won the Mountain West Championship Tournament, went to the NCAAs. What is your biggest area that you think you need to improve this year? Because you guys seem to be clicking on all cylinders. I know you need to get the big guy back, but where do you think your biggest area improvement needs to be this year?
I think just the acclimating the new guys. We have some new guys that we want to help us out this year, so that's a big part. And then looking at the returners and just some of the things we'd struggle at is we did go through some offensive holes, and we sometimes struggled against more athletic teams, and I think that would be because we'd get spread out. So focusing on those areas of improvement and, you know, just refining the parts of our game that we do well to this point, I think those things will help us out.
Experience. I mean, when you talk about an experienced team in the Mountain West this year, Utah State's got to be at the top of the chart. You guys have some great experience. You being the leader of this team, Abel, as you mentioned, Diego, you guys look really strong. How much does that experience, because you look at teams that go deep in the tournament, and a lot of times the teams that are a lot younger, they may do well initially, but then they get into those experienced games where playing together really comes into play. What about with you guys? How much will that come into play this year?
I think it's going to be huge. Even just in practice right now, looking at, you know, when we get a group of returners together, you can just tell how we know each other very well. And when we do situational stuff in practice, the returners know exactly what they're doing, exactly when to foul, when to run what play, stuff like that. So I do think it's a big part in having that trust in each other and confidence. I think every guy that's coming back made multiple big plays for us last year. So we all have trust in each other to make those necessary plays.
And get an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. I know it was one done last year. I know you guys probably had more inspiration and hope than that. How much do you take from that this year? If you can get back to that level, do you think that'll help you in postseason play?
Yeah, definitely. It was tough to lose, but it was a really good experience just to see how big the stage is and how awesome it was. It was very, very unfortunate that we didn't play well, just didn't have our best game. But I think hopefully we'll get a chance to go back there and And if we do that, experience will definitely help us because we won't be worried about all the other stuff. We'll just be focused on that game and going out and trying to win.
And finally, you know, assess this team right now. Trying to not to be politically correct because obviously you got to say all the politically correct answers. But this team, how good is Utah State this year?
I think we have a chance to be really, really good. I think we are hungry. But we're also very confident. Last year we were very hungry, not sure how much confidence we had until later on in the season. This year we're just as hungry, but we know that we have a chance to be really, really good. You see it in, obviously not every practice is perfect, but you see it in stretches, and we're excited to finally, you know, we get our scrimmage this weekend, get our exhibition the next week, and then we get to start playing. And that's what we've been waiting all summer for, to get back out there and to show the country and to show the league that we really can be as good as people think.
Good luck to you this year.
Okay, thank you.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Holden defends on the left and a shot. Fought off by Fleury off the post and off to the near side. Fleury tried to slide over to his right and shrug it off. Now we've got a whistle.
It is time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, people were starting to worry about this team. I think they do. And I don't blame the fans in Las Vegas because a lot of fans are new to the game of hockey. And so when your team starts a little bit slow, Mags, they you know, maybe not perform the way you think they are, you start to worry a bit.
No,
the team
no
started a bit slow. But I give them excuses because you have to know the game. And they're learning the game.
The Vegas fans are like this with every sport. It's not just
hockey.
All right,
well, this is
quick to jump off and be cynical about their team.
You've experienced it as a UNLV quarterback. I know, so I can't argue because you've experienced firsthand. But I still think I'm giving them a little bit of a pass because hockey is a sport a lot of people aren't really familiar with. But the one thing you should be familiar with is, you know what's so cool is a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, Mags, in 2003, the number one overall pick. And we hear of all these number one overall picks in various sports being busts. This is one that not only was not a bust, this is one that has maybe even overachieved as a number one pick. I don't think when you take a guy number one overall, you can dream that he's going to have this kind of a career.
Well, especially
but
a goalie.
57 shutouts after last night. He gets to shut out his old team again. How good does that feel with a team that let you go to shut him out? And
well, hey, remember, Pittsburgh gave the Golden Knights a second-round pick to take Marc-Andre
Fleury. I know, it's crazy. Crazy. So I like it, Mags. And one of the things last night's game, what everyone's been waiting for is, when is Wild Bill going to get his first goal? I'm so glad he just shut up. I'm so tired of hearing that. He does so much for this team. And he'll get his goals and he'll get his points. And he finally put one in the net last night, along with, in my opinion now, one of the top five players in the NHL. And if you don't give Mark Stone that kind of credit, he does so much more than just score goals, and which he does as good as just about anybody in the National Hockey League. But Stone is just all around the puck on a regular basis. He plays the point on the power play. I mean, this guy just does it all, Mags, and he's so much fun to watch. What a tremendous acquisition Mark Stone was.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, we're spoiled here in Vegas because there's so many good players on this team. I mean, Max Pacioretty is a stud. You look at Mark Stone. Mark Stone is a guy who, I mean, he probably won't be in the conversation to win the Hart, but he's a guy who's definitely going to be in the mix for the Selkie because he is such a great 200-foot player. But honestly, I think right now you could certainly put him in the conversation for the Hart, obviously over 82 games.
Yeah.
You know, but he's definitely he's playing like a guy who feels slighted because remember all those lists that they had early in the season over the summer, he wasn't in the top 20 players, and I mean he's clearly a top 20 player in the league. I mean, he's so good. He does so many things good. And the thing is, he's got such an unorthodox style because he never puts his stick on the ice, which is so strange.
Which is like, it's a natural rule of thumb for a hockey player. Your stick should always be down on the ice.
But he's so good. And what I like about Mark Stone, he's not afraid to mix it up. Like, we've now seen Mark Stone, a guy who probably could be the captain of this team, get into two fights.
Dude, you know what he looks like? You go in the locker room, he reminds me of Ogie Oglethorpe of Slapshot. He's got the wild hairdo, and he is an imposing figure. I mean, he's standing up next to him. He's a big dude, you know?
He's solid.
We were standing right in front of him in the last game. I'm like, man, you know, I mean, he's...
Skates on or skates off?
What's it?
Oh, skates off. He's a big guy.
He's a big guy. But, I mean, I'm looking at him, and...
I think he looks
William
a lot
Carrier
bigger than he is.
William Carrier is not that much bigger as far as stockiness goes than
and
Mark
I think
Stone.
Stone plays big, too, which
he does.
You know, like he's a guy who looks a lot bigger than he is, and he plays a lot bigger than he is. I mean, he's a real imposing guy when he's out there on the ice.
100%. He looks like, you know, he looks like somebody that would would be a collector for the mafia or something, man. And he just has this nasty look on his face. And somebody you would not want to meet in the out in the alley.
He kind of has that 1930s gangster kind of look.
He just does.
He looks mean on the ice. Like, you watch him, he looks mean. Like, he's not a guy you want to rumble with.
No. And Mags, and then over to the guy we started the conversation with, Fleury. You know, 57 shutouts now, 38 years old, like seven concussions deep into a NHL career that started back in 2003. I mean, how different would this franchise be in the short history of this franchise be without Marc-Andre Fleury? I mean, it's an over-asked question, but really, you really need to sit and think about how many games, including the Ottawa game the other night, that this guy has allowed you to win.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the crazy thing, because Ottawa played a really good game. I mean, if Ottawa won that game, you could say they earned it, right?
Fleury's making saves with his glove off.
Yeah. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, the funniest thing is, he's kind of like Superman in a way, right? Like, we talk about, it's such a cliche, but he's so funny, and he's such a joking guy when he's in the locker room. But yet, when he gets on the ice, when he gets on the ice, he's like a completely different. But yet, the funny thing is, he doesn't forget how to have fun on the ice, right? Like, last week against the Kings,
but
he shoves
Superman,
Iofalo, and
other than with his mask pulled down, he looks like Clark Kent all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
He does, and I mean,
and he's not a very big guy.
I said this a number of times, and I will say this: in all the years of doing this, and I think I started doing this type of thing back when there were still one or two dinosaurs running around. I have never met any athlete at the professional level nicer and more accommodating than Marc-Andre Fleury.
Especially a guy who's as accomplished as he is.
And I mean, always bothered. There's always a mosh pit around him after every game, and yet he will answer every question, literally, until Sage Salmon steps in and says, last question, Mark Fleury will take every... And he'll still answer questions if you keep asking. He's that accommodating, that nice a guy. And I already told, and I'll tell the story a million times, but the story from, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago, man, where he said he owed me an interview from the practice, and then he saw me that night and literally beckoned and waved me over. I've never had anything like that happen to me in my life.
Feel real special, didn't it?
It made me feel once in my life I felt really special for a second. I kind of just got that feeling again right now. Listen, real quick, we do got to get the break. We got TJ Otzelberger coming up, but Caleb, let's do the S&B with C real quick on the Raiders. They had their bye week coming off of two straight wins over pretty good teams in the Indianapolis Colts, who have definitely surprised with Jacoby Brissett. And then, of course, the Bears, who are beating them most of the game, and they come back and win that one at the end. Two impressive victories, but in a little over an hour, they're going to be playing in Green Bay against the team that was the luckiest team I've ever seen in my life on Monday night. And let's just leave it at that, because it's been over-talked about and beaten up, and I'll start crying again if I talk too much about it. But do the Raiders got a shot to go into Lambeau Field and beat this team?
No.
You wouldn't have thought the Lions did.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I think the Raiders, because of some, they're battling some injuries and on the offensive line, especially with Trent Brown being inactive officially for the game. So I don't think with the way the Packers have been playing defensively this season and with the running game that the Packers have found also, I don't think that they have enough to get it done, the Raiders, in Lambeau. I think it's just a tough part of the schedule, playing the Bears last week or last time out and then coming and playing the Packers. It's a tough part of the schedule.
Well, looking at the schedule at the beginning of the season, I don't think either one of us would have thought they'd be 3-2 right now, especially the way they're 3-2 with wins on the road in Indy and then Chicago at home.
I'd agree with that. Those are surprising. Yeah, I don't think they get it done this week against the Packers, though.
All right, well, that is S&B with C, the silver, all about the silver and black. We'll do that every week. And we're going to go to break right now. We will come back on the other side with TJ Otzelberger, new head coach for UNLV Running Rebels.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. This Friday, the UNLV Runnin' Rebels officially begin a new era. This is the guy now responsible for making this new era a successful one. New head coach, TJ Otzelberger. Coach, thanks for joining us this morning.
Appreciate you having me on.
Oh, absolutely. You got to be excited, chomping at the bit. You've been waiting a while to get here, able to retain some of the former players, and you brought in some new ones, including the Pac-12 Sixth Man of the Year from Utah. What are we expecting? We're this Friday night, first preseason game, call it an exhibition game, and fans can come out, get their first chance to go into the Thomas and Mac, check out the Runnin' Rebels. What should we expect?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for our guys to get out and play together against somebody else. You know, you get to this point in practice, and you just, you know, you need to play fresh blood. You need new bodies, a different team. So it'd be great for our guys. I think what our fans can expect is our guys to be highly competitive, to play with a tremendous sense of urgency and passion for the name on the front of their jerseys. We're going to get up and down the court. Going to be an aggressive team. It should be a fun night. Looking forward to seeing how our guys perform.
Yeah, and Abel, talking about how important was it, Coach, to get in with the current players, you know, so you could get a nucleus of some guys that already had experience of playing here that could talk to the other players, especially a leader like Amari Hardy, who really stepped up as a leadership role last year, and to get to retain him, and then, of course, to get a couple of towers like Mbaké Zhang and Chekna Dembele back, get a couple of guys 6'11", that's got to help a great deal, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was most important when we came in to really get to know the players who are in the program. Helps give you a historical reference, get to know them better. They get to know, you know, myself and our coaching staff. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody that moved forward with us knew what they were signing up for, knew what we were going to be about. There's a high level of accountability. We challenge our guys at a daily basis. You know, we believe that we're going to outwork people, put more hours in, and we want to make sure that everybody that stayed with us felt the same way. We're fortunate that, you know, there's a core nucleus from that group that bought into it. Here we go, moving forward with them.
And talk about the newcomers. You got five new guys coming in, looking forward to seeing what can we expect from these guys. I mentioned Donnie Tillman, you know, the sixth man of the year in the Pac-12 last year for the Utah Utes. And, of course, a favorite of mine because I'm from Detroit and he's from Detroit, Michigan as well. Looking forward to seeing him. What can we expect from the newcomers and who do you expect to stand out? Obviously, Donnie, one of the guys, but who else are you expecting to stand out?
Yeah, and with Donnie, you know, he's a tremendous young man. He's a matchup problem. He can really get to the basket and make plays. He's great in the open floor with the ball and tremendous rebounder. I think some of the other guys that make an immediate impact are the newcomers. Elijah Mitru-Long, you know, was played 20 minutes a game for the University of Texas last year. Had been a starter on NCAA tournament team early in his college career. A guy that's just a natural leader. Thinks about everybody outside of himself in terms of making plays, sharing the basketball, give us a veteran guard with some experience. Joan Antonio, tremendous shooter, coming in from South Plains Junior College. Probably a guy that's been our most consistent effort guy defensively. I mean, he flies all over the court and a guy that can really knock down shots. Those guys stand to make some pretty immediate impacts. I think Vitaly Shebel, transfer from Arizona State, immediately eligible, gives us some depth on the front line. Guy with some versatility, can play either front court position. And then the others that came in, David Jenkins and Moses, well, they'll have to sit this year in residence 1 year and be eligible the following season.
Coach, your style of play at South Dakota State, are we going to see something similar here at UNLV when people watch them at the Thomas and Mack?
Yeah, I think that's what we're working towards. I mean, in order to do that, you've really got to be in great condition to fly up and down the floor on both sides to keep that pace going. You've got to have a group of guys that are willing to share the basketball so the ball doesn't stick, it stays on the move. You need guys with IQ. And again, it was a style that, you know, our first year we kind of hit stride midway through the year, late in the season. The next two seasons we proved to be one of the top, you know, 10 teams in the country in pretty much every offensive category. But in terms of efficiency and three-point shooting, we're right up there at the top nationwide. So those are some of the same ideals and principles we'll try to implement here. How quickly they take hold remains to be seen, but we're going to be trying to put in our process and our system right from the jump.
Not to put you on the spot, Coach, but what are your expectations this year for UNLV Runnin' Rebels? The year one, obviously, it is a new era, as we mentioned, but what are you expecting?
Yeah, I'm very process-driven in how we're getting better every day. I don't think setting goals to win the conference or go to the NCAA tournament are things that, you know, really pay off in terms of being successful. I think it's your daily work habits. And I know that if we work hard each and every day and get better than we were the day before, the results will take care of themselves. So we're really trying to focus on that daily improvement. I feel like our guys have embraced it and feel proud of their progress up to this point.
Coach, last question. Talk to the fans at UNLV, the MAC. You know, at times the place got some crowd, but I'll tell you what, there were games where you could yell to your friend across the stadium last year and they'd hear you. What do you want to say to the fans to come out this year and rejuvenate this team and pack the MAC?
Well, first of all, the young men in our program are going to carry themselves the right way on the court. They're going to carry themselves the right way in the classroom and succeed and in the community. They're going to be young men you can be proud to support. They're going to be highly competitive. We're going to strive to win every game that we play. I mean, we are setting out to be at our best. And so I think it's going to be a fun group to watch. They're going to be a team that embodies a lot of the blue-collar work ethic and mentality of Las Vegas, and I think they're going to make fans proud. So give us a chance to earn your trust and come on out and watch the Running Rebels.
Coach TJ Otzelberger of the Running Rebels, first year at UNLV. Coach, we wish you nothing but the best. Come on out. Friday night will be the first game. You can see him play West Coast Baptist College. It's an exhibition game, and the real deal starts on Tuesday, November the 5th. They'll be playing Purdue Fort Wayne, and those games start counting. Coach, wish you nothing but the best, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You as well. And let's get right into this real quickly, guys. NFL Week 7, a big moving week for a lot of teams, like my hometown team, the Lions, after taking one on the chin last week to Green Bay. I'm not going to whine about it anymore. I did enough on Facebook. But the point is, it's a moving week. The Lions lose this game at home to the Vikings. It's probably catastrophic to their season. It's a game that I think they have to win recovering from that. And there's a lot of teams like that. The Jets, Chris, this is a game that they somehow find a way to beat the New England Patriots. It could turn their season completely around.
Yeah, because you look at the schedule coming up for the Jets. They have a lot of winnable games. Miami twice. They play the Redskins. So, I mean, it's the kind of game
the
where...
The Bills are a house of cards.
Well, no, I disagree. The Bills' defense is really, really good.
Caleb like the Bills.
No, I mean...
I never said that.
They're not fun to watch.
I don't think they're as good as people think.
They're not fun to watch. I mean, Josh Allen isn't a guy who's going to light it up, but...
What are they, 15 points right now?
I think it's 17, isn't it? 15 and a half, something, some places, but...
Yeah, it's... I saw in the paper, I think it was 17.
I don't think anybody's
mags.
That good.
Right no, I don't trust Buffalo to put up that many
17.
Points.
17.
Yeah.
And Miami's starting Fitzpatrick today, right? He's getting the nod.
Yeah.
Former Buffalo Bill, the Ryan
beard.
Fitzpatrick.
That guy could come in. You know, he's that
fear
guy that if you always got to fear the beard. And we're not talking about James Harden. All right, let's get to our pick segment as we're running a little bit low or running a little bit late. But we'll let the Wiz, who hasn't had a chance to talk
Dr.
all
Oz.
Show. There he is right now. Let's see. I mean, he's pretty much 0-2 in his debut. He's fitting right in with the rest of
yeah.
us. So everyone out there that's getting ready to place wagers, now's the time to grab your pencil and write this down. And my suggestion would be go the other way. But go ahead, Oz. Tell them how not to bet. Who are you betting on?
I got to say, well, just really quickly, I do a 10-teamer every week with my buddy. We put like 10 to win like 8,000 or whatever. We've hit 8 of 10 every single time, and it just so happens that my two picks are always the two, like one of the two that I get wrong.
Are you buying any of that, Caleb?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to...
Oh, come on. You got to give me a... I'll bring in the ticket next time.
Caleb's all about evidence, man. It's all about evidence.
I have receipts. Okay. But with that being said, I am taking the Dolphins. It's a sure bet.
Oh, my goodness.
The Bills' point differential on the entire season is plus 20. For an 800
all right,
team.
Minus yeah. they are the Dolphins are getting 17 points in Buffalo, and that is the way the Wiz is going this week with the Buffalo Bills. Mags, we'll let you go second.
Well, I'm going to stay in the state of New York, but I'm going to go with the Giants laying, what is it, 3.5?
Three. They're only three. Yeah.
Three.
With Saquon Barkley coming back.
Weather in New York, cold, rainy. I don't trust Kyler Murray just yet. I think, regardless of whether David Johnson's in or not, I think the Giants. In a battle of two, top six picks
solid.
At quarterback, Daniel Jones and solid. Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones, I think, has been impressive. I like the Giants
today. Remember I said this game during the break? I'm like, why is the Giants only giving up 3 points to Arizona
at home?
Because
the Giants aren't that good.
Like you said, rookie quarterbacks on both sides, you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and it's bad weather for Daniel Jones, too.
That's the reason I'm not going with the Giants. Something smells wrong about
Kyler
the
Murray
three-point
has
line.
Small hands, and small hands don't do well in cold weather.
And cold, rainy weather. Yeah. Who do you got?
I'm going with the Skins. You might say I'm officially tanking here.
Again.
But there's something that I just – this feels like the Skins can cover this. I think it's 9.5 or
9.5 at home. They're hosting the Niners, and I'm going to
– I think the Niners are a good team. They're a solid team, but they're playing good, and every good team will have a test. And I think the Skins will be that lull week for the Niners. Oof, that's what I'm counting on here. The Niners
skins,
will win, but
the skins
will
got
keep
a test
it
last week from the Miami Dolphins. We'll see if they can be one. I'm closing out. I'm going with my Lions, man. All week I've been saying they're going to lose. I'm turning it around. They're going to win at home. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I want to thank T.J. Otzelberger for joining the show. Sam Merrill, so give me some time. Of course, The Wiz for taking care of our Facebook Live. Chris Magnum Chapman for producing, and of course my co-host Caleb Herring. I'm Brian Feldman. We will be back. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.